deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hello listeners and good afternoon. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychophenomena, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in the Seattle area and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. I want to welcome our new friends who I know are listening from Switzerland. Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren, and mein neues Freund. Today, we're very grateful to have as our guest Major Ed Dames. He's considered the founder of remote viewing. For those of you who are not familiar with this term, remote viewing refers to the ability of one to view events in the past or in the future or occurring at present anywhere in the world. We'll be going to Major Ed Dames in a few minutes. He's on the air. I want to say that we're very grateful to have him on the show today, and I know he has a lot of very interesting things to say. He also teaches remote viewing, and his website is linked up to our show at our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. We will be taking call-ins after 3:30 p.m., and I wanted to give out our studio numbers. Our call-in line number here is area code 425-373-5527. And from those calling from abroad, just add 001 for the United States before calling that number. Our toll-free number here within Western Washington is 1-888-298-5569. I have two announcements. Our program's become very successful, so we're expanding it to 2 hours beginning 1 week from today. So instead of being on the air from 3 to 4 p.m., we'll be on the air from 2 to 4 p.m. Also, I have just started a new spiritual and psychic newsletter. The newsletter will only cost $15 a month for two bi-monthly issues. However, if you subscribe between now and June, the cost will only be $10 a month. The first newsletter will give you details on how you can directly contact your spirit guides and how to protect yourself from any harm. I myself have been in contact with my angels and with spirits on the other side for over 20 years. And have been able to greatly spiritually advance as a result. I'd like to teach you all on how to contact your guides and how to find the answers you may seek for spiritual alignment, relationships, jobs, and career issues, and anything else you might want to find out. For those of you who are interested in subscribing, please see our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And for those who you subscribe this month or in June, I will also be including a special spiritual prayer that I guarantee will provide angelic protection from you and your family from any harm. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla Community College, and my angelic and earthly family. Our upcoming guests include Joe Trolley, one of the best psychics on the East Coast. He'll be coming live on next week's show. Professor David Jacobs, one of the world's best UFO researchers, who will be on the show live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania next week. Christine Day, an ambassador for the Pleiadian civilization on May 30th. She will also be bringing a live human extraterrestrial from the Pleiades civilization. We will also be having a special presentation by Scott Lemire at East West Books in Seattle on Friday, May 2nd. The details are on my website. Scott will give predictions for the United States and the world based on direct face-to-face conversations he has had with the Pleiadians and the International Alliance of Free Worlds. This will certainly be an out-of-this-world presentation, and I strongly urge everyone to come. Also on May 2nd, we will be interviewing psychic Jeffrey Marks, who lives here in the Seattle area and who's done a tremendous amount of work detailing his conversations with people who have passed on to the other side. Before we start, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello friends, my name's Ted Marr. I'm the radio show host of the Out of This World radio program. We focus in on psychic phenomenon and metaphysics. We have in a studio today one of the best astrologers and tarot readers in the Seattle area, Karen Winland. Karen, how did you become interested in this field?
Because I'm a control freak, like most of us. I need to know what's going on in life. And so tarot and astrology just answer those questions for us. Tarot is a present tense oracle. It talks about what's going on in life right now. And astrology looks at the big picture and says, am I headed the way I want to be? Am I being who I want to be?
Karen, how do people get a hold of you if they'd like a reading?
Show up at East West Bookshop every Friday, or you can email me at karen@seattleastrologer.com. Again, you can reach me at East West Bookshop every Friday, or at karen@seattleastrologer.com.
Thanks, Karen.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hello, and welcome back to KKNW 1150 AM Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr. We're very fortunate to have Major Ed Dames with us today. Ed, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Could you tell us, our listeners, a little bit about your background and how you got interested in remote viewing?
Well, I was a targeting officer at very high levels of the government, Office of Secretary of Defense, when I was a military officer, and I had many tools at my disposal in order to determine which intelligence targets we would exploit, predominantly in the erstwhile Soviet Union. As you might know, of course, nuclear delivery systems and biological warfare, chemical warfare targets were pretty high on my priority list. But there were some targets that were so classified by the Russians, just like we had programs that were very classified, very black, that by hook or by crook, I couldn't answer the mail. I couldn't get agents on the ground or satellites in the right place, and all these other things that we had at our disposal, electronically and otherwise. So, as a tactic of desperation, I turned to a nascent CIA Army project that used psychics. And son of a gun, if they weren't able to give me the leads I needed to initiate other work and employ other systems to penetrate these programs. But after using this unit for a while, after being one of their customers, I became so enthralled in the process that I stepped down from these cosmic levels of intelligence to take over as operations and training officer for that unit. And that was more than 30 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Amazing career you've had. I know you do. You do remote viewing now, and that you do teach people how to remote view as well. We were talking off air a few minutes ago about the Malaysian flight MH370. Don't mind me asking you, what have you seen with respect to that flight?
Well, on the 13th of last month, I published a map on the Coast to Coast AM radio site and showing the actual location of the aircraft. And this was while the search was still going on in the Gulf of Thailand, way to the east. Anyway, and to make a long story short, what happened was that the Captain Shah, Zahari Ahmad Shah, it was essentially a hijacking. It was he wanted to take the plane to Mogadishu, Somalia, but the co-pilot, the first officer, and I'd like to say to his family and his fiancée that this guy died a hero. Mm. He attempted to regain control of the aircraft after there was a terrible altercation, and he was not able to do it because the plane decompressed in this altercation in the cabin. The cabin underwent a rapid decompression, very, very rapid decompression, and most of the crew and the passengers were killed, died pretty fast from hypoxia, crippling hypoxia and hypothermia. Mm-hmm. And when the first officer was trying to regain control of the aircraft, it was too late. He was physiologically out. He just couldn't move his body, couldn't control the aircraft control services. And the captain was locked outside the cabin door. He's a younger man, and he was able to overcome was not able to fight off the captain and lock him outside the cabin, but it was too late. So they went down into the water off the coast of Myanmar, about, I would say, 60 miles off the coast of Myanmar.
Mm. Wow.
Went down pretty fast, too.
Wow. Well, it's you know, the world is so lucky to have your talents, Ed, because at least we now know what happened, and the families can have closure, some sort of closure on it. I know it's a horrible event, certainly, and I hope to God nothing like this, you know, happens again.
Yeah, the pilot actually, you know, again, his destination was Mogadishu, Somalia, and he had been training as a link trainer at home, a flight simulator to fly there, but he erased those files. I think the FBI has reconstructed that data by now.
I see. Wow. I know that you have family in the Ukraine, what sorts of things do you see for the Ukraine coming in?
Well, I live in Ukraine. I've lived there for more than 8 years, and my I have an apartment in Kiev. I'm only in the States because it's an operational base here, a base of operations for me in the States for a number of things, mostly missing children.
Mm-hmm.
But I live in Kiev, and I've lived all in many cities and villages in Ukraine, and the situation there is beyond help in terms of politics and economics. It's just beyond help. It's a very sad situation.
Do you think this current conflict could extend a number of years without a resolution, or what do you think might happen from what you've seen?
Well, there's not going to be a real resolution quickly. I think what will happen is I'm being on the inside and you know, having so many friends and relatives there. In fact, my father-in-law was an ex-navigation officer on a Soviet boomer, a nuclear submarine. He and I had some friction when we first met, former enemies.
Oh.
But he wants to go back. He and his colleagues want to return to Russia. They miss it very much. They live in the east, in Lugansk, which was not far from Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the country will fragment. I think NATO will try to stop that, and that will lead to some violent clashes. And God help us if it goes beyond that. But as much I could say about it anyway, that there's no political solution or social solution that's going to work for that country in the next several years.
Mm-hmm.
It will fragment.
I see.
It was Ukraine, as most people know, was the breadbasket of the erstwhile Soviet Union. And now, as I say, it's the basket case. There's just no way that country can maintain its political integrity or social integrity. It never really had that kind of integrity to begin with. And you put massive degrees of corruption on top of all that, it's just a mess.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting.
I fear for my family because, you know, we've been dodging bullets. I go back again in 2 weeks and to a nascent civil war.
Mm-hmm.
I have plans, of course, in place to circumvent danger, but still feel sorry for the rest of the people.
I don't think anybody in the United States, nor in the West, certainly, or the Soviet Union, for that matter, wants another major war. Of course,
I would caveat that.
Really?
The military-industrial complex and the bankers would love another war, or more wars, a bigger war. So, you know, just qualify your statement, please.
Okay, all right. I guess,
having been on the inside, deep on the inside, I know the thinking well.
Well, it's interesting listening to the major media outlet and NPR as well, because they all seem to you know, make the drumbeats of war for why we should, you know. I don't know. I don't understand it, Ed. It doesn't seem the risk of another wider conflict would be worth it. But you'd also mentioned Chernobyl, too. And I was thinking about Fukushima. Have you remote viewed Fukushima, Ed? And could you tell us what you've seen?
In fact, I predicted Fukushima. All those predictions are on the Internet. I think it can be found. I was approached by the Japanese in 2004 to remote view the next, what they called X Day, the big earthquake in Tokyo. They were very afraid that they might do a lot of damage in Tokyo, you could see me working that case there. And I said, well, no, the next big earthquake is not going to do a lot of damage. Some subway flooding in the subways, a few old buildings, the facades will come down, nobody's going to die, a few injured, but you have a very, very big problem. Take a look at this. I said, one of your reactors, your nuclear reactors, your power generator is going to break and cause at least a mini Chernobyl, and in the first few years there'll be at least 50 to 80,000 deaths. And TV Asahi said, Ed, we can't tell the public that. I said, yeah, I know. So I went on Coast to Coast show 2 weeks later and told the public what I had found that the Japanese could not say.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government, I mean, that's too scary. I understand the perspective. But even after it happens, when it does, and it did happen, the government will squelch any of the real facts, the facts of the case in terms of how deadly that accident has been. In the case of Chernobyl, and I live just to the west of east of Chernobyl. The plume from Chernobyl, the airborne plume, went over Belarus and then started landing in Switzerland. Lots of Swedish children had high degrees of thyroid cancer because of the radionuclides. A child's thyroid gland it grows rapidly and it absorbs loves iodine, and so radioactive iodine, isotopes of iodine 131 and others, you know, are rapidly absorbed by a child's thyroid, and the cancers follow. But and Belarus took it tough, and if you've seen I don't think your listeners would want to see the photos of the children of Chernobyl. They just look like the children of Fallujah with depleted uranium rounds, causing terrible, terrible birth defects. But that plume did the Chernobyl was capped. It was put in a concrete sarcophagus. A lot of engineers and the workers sacrificed their lives to do that, died a horrible death after the process. But Fukushima is not this. There is no technology that can stop Fukushima. It is the gift that keeps on giving. It is the greatest human man-made tragedy in the recorded history. It just nothing will come close.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means for people like you who live up in the Seattle area is a bad thing, because that radiation, both the marine plumes and the airborne plumes, radionuclide plumes, are going to impinge constantly and continuously in your neck of the woods. There's no sanctuaries there in the long run. After about 2 years, it's not going to really be a safe place to live.
Hmm. Well, that's very sobering. I know that I've tried in my own efforts to try to get our government, the governor's office here in Washington, Jay Inslee, interested in the issue. No response. Not interested.
It's not going to happen. And whether it's a UFO problem, carcinogens in food, or whatever, if the government is not, it cannot control something, they're not going to test for it, because they know there's nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll stay mum on it. In Japan, it's much worse. In Japan, it's illegal to test in some areas, and shortly it'll be illegal to even talk about it. As a journalist or in social outlets.
So if I had my show, if we were talking in Japan, and that law's in effect, then my show would be illegal to talk about Fukushima.
Oh, you'd be shut down. Absolutely. You'd be shut down immediately, if not before the show happened, if the government got wind about your broadcast and the issues you're going to talk about.
So I'm not saying we're any better, but sometimes governments then prefer to stick their head in the sand rather than face an issue, especially when there's nothing they can do, perceive that there's nothing that can be done.
Correct. That's essentially paraphrases.
We spoke off air earlier, Ed, about some possible sanctuaries for people. I was just curious, what do you see for as far as safe places to go in the future?
Well, a lot of that is proprietary to my clients.
Okay.
But in terms of where you got, there's nothing in Washington, there's nothing in the Vancouver area, or there's nothing in British Columbia, because the airborne plumes, impact British, all of this beautiful countryside that you guys have there, totally beautiful, is going to be corrupted by radiation over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be west of the Canadian Rockies, east of the Canadian Rockies, before you're in areas that are not really so affected. But in the terms of the states, there's nothing in except way out in Spokane. When you begin to get in the Spokane area and off into Idaho, then you've got some sanctuary zones. Nothing in California, nothing in Oregon. Because there's nothing to stop that plume, and if you look at the currents, air currents, and jet stream, it's constant, and it's bioaccumulative.
Well, I know I've done some research on it. I've actually talked to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency here in Seattle, and they refused to do any testing. And actually, and last year, President Obama specifically ordered 8 of the air monitoring stations in the West for radiation to be shut down. And it's silly because they got the scientists, they got the equipment, they have it's all paid for by tax dollars, and these guys are idle.
And well, the problem is so big and so horrendous, the government can do nothing about it. So they would prefer to keep the people in the dark because you can't really run an effective government if people think you can't say you're not in control. Governments have to be able to say they're in control of something. And they can't control this. They can't control a UFO phenomenon and those kinds of things. So they say nothing because it would make them look weak and ineffective.
Well, I know that the people, my listeners, are interested in the issue. I've discussed it on the air before. Things are sort of at an impasse now. I've contacted our Washington Department of Public Health. The director, John Wiseman, refuses to do anything. California has expressed some interest. Oregon is doing random testing every 3 months. They have testing only of the marine water along the shore. It's something. British Columbia is not interested in testing. Neither is Alaska. Governor Abercrombie, I've talked to his office in Honolulu and Hawaii. They are interested, actually. But again, what can they do?
Yeah, I lived in Maui for 7 years. It's a paradise, all right, but unfortunately, not the airborne plume there. The airborne plume hits Kauai, the island of Kauai in the north, but it doesn't really impact the big island of Maui so much. But the marine plumes, wow, they're over the years, that's going to be very, very deadly for marine fauna and flora in the island, sadly.
Do you see a lot of the marine life dying off, or will they be able to adapt in a mutated state? I know it's a hard question to answer, but...
Yeah, it is hard. I could go on and on at length about the different species and the impacts and things like that. But for us humans that eat these things, they eat these creatures, for those of us that do,
right.
we can't do it anymore. We will not be able to eat them because they bioaccumulate all these radionuclides. And once they're in our systems, too, the cancer starts.
Right. Well, one of the main there's lots of radionucleotides produced by a reactor and by Fukushima, Ed, as I'm sure you know. One of the main telltale ones is cesium-137, which has a half life of 30 years or a cumulative longevity of approximately 900 years.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Right, and that stuff has been showing up in the fish out here. I've actually sent some samples in to get tested. I'm waiting for the results back. But,
I'm aware of this, Ted. I'm completely aware of that. As I say, you don't have zones that are healthy in your neck of the woods anymore. Very sad. It's the greatest human tragedy in recorded history, as far as I'm concerned. Nothing can come close. If the Japanese had requested help from the Russians, who had some experience, something might have been able to happen, because the Russians would be able to diagnose. And the Japanese really requested any help rather than TEPCO covering it up, then something may have been possible. But right now, it's impossible. We're not going to have technology to be able to do anything about this. That's why I'm a big proponent of contact, of physical contact with other intelligences to ask for help.
I'm having a guest on next month, Scott Lemire. He just came out with a book called The Series Agenda. It's based upon direct conversations, face-to-face conversations he's had with the Pleiadians, and actually an ambassador of the Galactic Alliance of Planets. And they say, they've told him that they do have the technology to clean up the radiation quickly, if so asked.
We have seen the technology. That's why, as remote viewers, we've seen the technology. It was used here once before to scoop up radiation from clandestine Israeli nuclear tests in South Africa. We've seen actually drawn and sketched the technology as it pops in and vacuums up the radiation and pops back out. So we know it exists. That's why I said that.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I've been trying to effect change in my own small way out here, but I'm feeling very frustrated nowadays. But perhaps, I know that my guest next month, Scott Lemire, for those in the Seattle area, we will have a live presentation with Scott detailing what the Pleiadians and the Galactic Federation of Planets have told him about cleaning up Fukushima. It's very, very interesting. It's not something he's not done it telepathically. He's met with them face-to-face, direct conversations with them over many years. And his book that he's just published has come out with lots of interesting information. Let's take a quick commercial break for a couple of minutes, and then we'll come back on the air with Ed Dames. Hello, friends. I'd like to introduce you to one of the best mystics and psychotherapists we have in the area. Wonderful person named Jackie Conquest. Jackie, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, hello. My name is Jacqueline Conquest, and I also started a show here on KKNW. It's the first Thursday of every month at 8 a.m. on the Chat with Women Network, and it's called Jacqueline Conquest, Mystic and Psychotherapist.
What kinds of work do you do?
Well, I have been in my private practice for over 30 years. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, so I do couples and individuals and children, family therapy. But what I really find so profoundly shape-shifting for folks is because I'm a clinical certified hypnotherapist. So I do the deeper work of not only the subconscious mind, you know, and helping those to find their real understanding with it, you know, reconnecting to their higher self and trusting their intuition, but also the energy work where, like, in a few minutes, if someone's feeling depressed, then I can help them to release the depression and to reconnect to their higher self and then feel empowered and to feel free. So I kind of, let's put it this way, one of a testimony I had from a client who came into session one day, this was many, many years ago, and she was on antidepressants, and I started seeing her, and one day she comes back, and of course she'd been so jazzed because she didn't need to take the antidepressants anymore. And so anyway, she'd seen her doctor and he was baffled, and she told me, I tried to explain to my doctor what you do, and all he said was, it's magic. Just magic.
So, well, maybe that's the best explanation for it, Jackie.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, listeners, Jackie's really good at what she does, and if you have any kinds of those kinds of issues, please do get a hold of her. How do people get a hold of you, Jackie?
My number is 206-303-9482. That's 206-303-9482. And then my website is Jacqueline Conquest, and Conquest is spelled just like conquering something. Mm-hmm. Jacqueline Conquest Mystic.com, and there's a contact page on there, and it talks all about what I do and, you know, insurances. I can also, you know, take insurances.
Okay, wonderful. Well, listeners, please do contact Jackie. I think she's fantastic. She's
Thank
a beautiful
you.
Person, and I know you'd be happy with her work.
Thank you.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural, alternative talk, 1150 AM.
Hello, listeners. We're back on the air with Major Ed Dames. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW, 1150 here in Bellevue. I'm going to be asking Ed some more questions about what he sees for the United States in the future. But for those who'd like to call in, our phone number here is area code 425-373-5527 or toll free at, let's see, it's 1-888-1- Hold on here. Make sure I get this number. 1-888-298-5569. I wanted to say 1-800, but it's 1-888-298-5569. Ed, we were speaking off air a little bit about the U.S. economy. What do you see for the economic conditions in the United States over the next couple of years?
A collapse, the end of the petrodollar, the end of the dollar as reserve currency, and the end, after that, of the dollar as a fiat currency. And that will be the catalyst for martial law beginning probably next year in the United States.
I see. Well, there have been some reports in the past couple of years of different federal agencies amassing millions and millions of rounds of what's called hollow point bullets. Now, hollow point bullets are usually used to kill people, not to injure, but just usually to kill people. And the agencies such as Social Security, benign agencies such as Fish and Wildlife have all massed all these weapons and the ammunition as well. Do you think this could fit in with a possible scenario of that happening?
Well, I don't think we're who's kidding whom here. Yeah. It's 15 bullets for every American now. Yeah, those are for us. The people have become the enemy. We've all become enemies of the state now.
As far as the weather goes, I know that there's we've had a there's a drought in the West and Midwest now. Do you think that there will be adverse growing conditions to, for example, the U.S. is considered the breadbasket of the world in terms of wheat, corn, soybeans. Have you remote viewed what might happen as far as our agricultural?
Yes, years ago, as a matter of fact, because it is such a serious problem. The problem is that the climate is changing so rapidly. The crops, food crops, are not going to be able to be grown in the traditional way. Seasons are changing, and weather is becoming erratic very rapidly. And so this is a huge problem. And indirectly, it's going to cause the death of millions and millions of people, particularly in third world countries who have very little water, if they have water at all, and it's certainly not clean, and very little food.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tremendous tragedy in terms of the human race and in our generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you had advice for my listeners in the Seattle area, how best prepare for the coming things, which you've seen, remote viewing, what advice would you give them? Would you advise them perhaps to move inland?
Get out of the cities and move inland.
Move inland, okay.
And get out of the cities, stay out of the cities. Because the cities don't, when the power grids go down and solar kill shots will take them down.
Mm-hmm.
Indirectly, the cities don't have enough resources to support the people. There's not enough fish in the streams, if there are any streams at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Mad Max scenarios, those kinds of things. I'm not saying that move into a community with like-minded people, because that's not such a good thing. Those can turn into Jim Jones type of arrangements, situations. But don't have a bunker mentality, because people need people. You cannot survive without other people. You're going to run out of bullets. You're going to get an abscess tooth, and that will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You need other people. So find communities that are small enough to support themselves with the local resources when the power goes out and there's no gasoline.
Mm-hmm. All right. Would you recommend getting transferring your dollars into harder assets, for example, real estate in inland or perhaps gold and silver?
Gold and silver.
Okay. Do you see, let's say it's 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road, what kind of medium of exchange do you think that'll be left? Do you think it'll be a new currency, Ed, or will it be in hard assets like gold and silver?
The rest of the world outside of the U.S., it'll be a new currency. It'll be a gold-supported currency that's being worked out as we speak by the BRICS.
Mm-hmm.
And that will happen. It'll be a gold-backed currency. That China now absorbs all of its own production, has more gold than India.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians and the Chinese have taken advantage of the fire sale prices from controlled markets for. I'm not talking paper gold or gold futures. I'm talking hard gold, and that will form the basis of a semi-backed new currency, a gold-backed currency. It'll be a basket of currencies in a new World Bank. The BRICS are putting together of their own international monetary fund, so they're going to just sidestep us and do an end run around the U.S. dollar. What will we use here in the States? Probably barter.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do you see have you seen a remote? This might be difficult to do, Ed, and set a timeline on it. But if we will indeed have problems next year with the economy and martial law, Have you been able to see what kind of prices gold and silver might? I guess they'd go through the roof, wouldn't they?
About 12 years ago, I predicted a global economic collapse and gold going to 2,000. So I would say gold will be around 2,500 next year. Will be just my swag, but that's my guess.
Okay, and silver? What price do you think silver might be?
Oh, probably 100.
100.
At least 100 an ounce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you see, Ed, for the future of Russia? Do you see problems there as well in the future, or
no?
No,
they'll become, along with the Chinese, they will become the new world leaders, the new superpower. That marriage will probably last around a quarter of a century. And Russia really does not want to link up with China, but they have no choice because something has to be done to counter the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But Russia will become really a global leader in many ways too. I mean, they're already heading to Mars. They're going to colonize Mars. The Chinese are going to colonize the moon. So this is real leadership,
mm-hmm.
and they're replacing the U.S. Everything has a beginning and end: lives, relationships, empires. You know, and mm-hmm. we've had a good ride. We've been in the fast lane, using other people's credit cards for a long time, over 100 years, and it was great, but it's over. We were bankrupt 30 years ago as a country, economically. Morally, we're now bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
I think. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you said, Ed, that the dollar would collapse, what have you been able to review the price of oil possibly in the next couple of years?
Or would that... No, I haven't looked at at petroleum. I'm too concentrated on the gas flowing through Ukraine right now and that situation because that's my home.
Sure. How about China in 10 years? Do you think she'll have an alliance with Russia, and that they'll be
the alliance is happening now. It started secretly or semi clandestinely about 3.5 years ago, if not longer, and it's blatant now. They will come up. Yeah.
All right.
They have to counter this thing, this beast called the United States. Our politics are bombs. That's it. Military-industrial complex. Weapons and war are what we export. We have no other exports except entertainment, period. We don't produce anything other than bombs and weapons, and we use them. That's when we bring democracy to another country, that's the way we bring it in, that way. God save us or the world from NATO and the U.S. democracies. Expansion of democracy, so-called.
Well, I hope you don't mind me asking this question, Ed, but if you were the president, what would you do to turn things around? I know that's a big question. You'd have to do something with the military-industrial complex to reorient our economy from a war footing to that of domestic consumption and making this place a better place to live, obviously.
No, it would have to be done globally. The world's too small now, politically and socioeconomically, to really... have one nation try to control its resources and its population and its politics. There really is no solution for the U.S. anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was about 30 years ago. We could have pulled it off. Mm-hmm. We could have kept production in here and all the talent that this country produced. I mean, we still have the best universities in the world.
Sure.
But they're filled with foreign students.
Mm-hmm.
And My son is a brilliant scientist, quantum mechanics, MIT professor now, 31 years old. He's going to China. He's half Chinese, and he plans on going to China.
Interesting. Well, we've covered the Ukraine, Ed, the future of the United States, what you've seen, Malaysia Flight 370, Fukushima, Chernobyl, a little bit about sanctuaries in the United States. Have you remote viewed this is another question. Have you been able to remote view the Kennedy assassination as to what really happened?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, long ago I did that too. Yeah, there was a flechette fired from inside the car. There was a high-velocity round the high caliber round fire from outside the vehicle. Yes, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. But what ensured that the president would die was a flechette that was fired pneumatically from the dashboard of the car. It went through JFK's Adam's apple and out the back of his neck. Very small penetration. And so that was orchestrated by our former cross-dressing FBI chief J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Baines Johnson in collusion with each other.
Hmm. I had heard that LBJ did not want to wait another term for Kennedy. He wanted to become president as soon as possible, and that Hoover didn't like JFK anyway. So
no. And there were other reasons that I cannot talk about on the internet.
Sure, that's fine. That's fine. I always thought the story about Oswald being the lone shooter was not accurate.
But no, it's not. Yeah. It's about as accurate as the story of 9/11.
Well, let's talk about 9/11. What have you seen there, Ed?
No, I can't talk about that, Ted.
Okay. Sorry.
I cannot.
All right.
I'm just saying that you knew, you know as well as I do that just take that. It's a big lie. The media just spouting just a big lie.
Sure.
World elites, when they want to do something, they'll do it.
The as far as protection goes from the radiation from Fukushima, can people take iodine pills, for example, to help them block the radiation? Or what?
Well, it's not good enough. You can't do that. Your children, yes, it's very important that they take iodine tablets so that the good iodine is absorbed before the bad stuff is. Yeah. So it's important. That's important. But otherwise, as an adult, no. You got to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get just worse. You know, the gift that keeps on giving, but it's bioaccumulative. It's just going to make the entire West Coast hot. But the poor people in Fukushima, northern Japan is finished. It's the end of Japan. Japan's finished as a nation, absolutely finished.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it'll be within one generation, or how soon do you think?
Oh, yeah. Within you're going to start seeing the types of Chernobyl mutations very quickly within the next 5 years. Watch what happens. Mm-hmm. Of course, the government will try to keep it quiet at first, but the problem will become so widespread that it'll be impossible to put a lid on it.
I think Dr. Caldicott, while I had her on the show, or she has said at other conferences that this is basically the same thing—the end of the Japanese people as a people.
Yes, and the Japanese government has began negotiating 2 years ago with Myanmar and with another country. With China, the island of Hainan, to move Tokyo, lock, stock, and barrel, because they knew. They predicted how bad this problem would become and how quickly it would.
You're kidding. They negotiated with those two countries?
Myanmar, formerly Burma,
right.
and China, to looking for places to move their population.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Well, that's something you don't hear about on CNN.
No, of course not.
I was just curious. I've heard some interesting stories about how Fukushima. Do you think it really was an earthquake that caused the tsunami?
Yes.
Okay.
Throw out all the conspiracy theories.
Okay.
It was an earthquake.
All right. For the United States West Coast, I know that there's some nuclear plants down in California. There's Humboldt Bay, and there's another one in San Onofre. Do you see any problems from those facilities in the future from a tsunami or earthquake?
I haven't looked at those for that reason, but I did tip off certain authorities years ago about an attempted terrorist attack on San Onofre. But no, I haven't. There's too many things to remote view is a difficult process. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes hours. For instance, give you an example. On Egypt Air Flight 990, I was asked to remote view what happened in Egypt Air Flight 990. That took 2.5 hours for me to do. I mean, it's work. It's a lot of work.
Wow.
And life is short, so there's, you know, it becomes, and when you have the ability, after you learn remote viewing, it's a life-changing thing.
Sure.
You can't look at the world the same way you've looked at it before, because you know that you can potentially know anything. And so it becomes important to choose your targets. Mm-hmm. And because there's so many things,
sure.
archaeologically. In fact, I was approached yesterday to help find the tomb of Cleopatra, and in addition to that's a nice big fat contract, but it's exciting too, and that's something I won't turn down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. I get to have some fun. Most of my work is dead kids and child murderers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you do a great service to humanity, Ed, in finding what happened to lost and missing children. My foster mother used to do the same work for a local police department out here for many years. And it was very depressing work. She'd often find the children or find out what had happened to them, but by the time she found them, of course, they were injured or...
It's about 4 hours. The average, most of the children, although it's changing now, but most of the child abductions, missing endangered children, are girls, 12 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only 4 hours. A vehicle is almost always used. That's the spider's web is a vehicle. And he'll never be far from his vehicle in an abduction. But it's generally 4 hours between an abduction, a rape, a murder, and the body being thrown away in the weeds. 4 hours. And I can work in 4 hours, but I can't. I can find a child in 4 hours. I go for their skull. I remote view the child's skull. That way, if they're dead or alive, I solve. You know, two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
I can get the location in 4 hours, but it's too late to get the location to the authorities to do anything about it.
I see. I wanted to ask you. We've got about 10 minutes left, Ed, and I wanted to ask you just a couple more questions. About other planets. Have you remote viewed Mars or the dark side of the moon?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Many times, of course. If you have a skill like this, then you're certainly going to look at those kinds of things because it's fun and exciting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For the benefit of our listeners, what have you found on Mars, if you could talk about it?
Yeah, there are actually what we call sentient machines that are actually on the surface of Mars, but there's a lot of activity below the surface, too. Also, again, machines, for lack of a better word, robots. There are no life, carbon-based life forms that we've ever detected there. And on the back of the moon is a very interesting thing. Parked right in a crater on the dark side of the moon is a big cubicle, looks like a layer cake because it's got layers, some type of colored layers. A big structure parked right in this crater. I think that's why the Clementine mission, the original NASA's Clementine mission that was supposed to map all of the moon, was turned over to the Air Force.
Oh,
interesting. Yeah. It was the Clementine mission, the mapping mission, was NASA. But I think when they spotted things like that, our government, the National Reconnaissance Office, said, we'll take that.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this big structure, is it alien or human?
Yeah, it's alien. It's doing something. It's operating as opposed to other structures on the lit surface of the moon that are ancient, just ancient. They look like mining. We've gone back in time and looked to see what they were doing. Mining operations, again, small robots. That were occasionally visited by extraterrestrial life forms, sort of like us, humanoid in nature. But for the most part, these structures are very, very ancient, millions and millions of years old. They're relics. But this thing on the backside of the moon is it's doing something.
Yeah,
we don't have the, I mean, you think of it. Nominally, it's probably 100 million years in terms of what we would call technology ahead of us. So go figure how it would be like me as a Neanderthal or Cro-Magnon, which is what many of my exes have called me, would try to, describe a Cadillac when you can't even describe a screw.
Oh. Interesting.
Comprehend it, yeah. Incomprehensible. It's beyond our ken.
Have you detected remote viewed any humans up there now?
Where?
On the moon?
Oh, no, there are no humans.
No humans.
There have been, but, they went back home, back home.
Sure. I'm just curious for our listeners, Ed, have you looked at any other planets in this solar system?
Recreationally, I did once on Neptune. That's how I discovered that this thing, this Gaia idea, the Gaia concept that the Earth has a consciousness of its own, I didn't buy into that until I explored Neptune. And I was detecting an intelligence. I was going down through the cloud tops and exploring using remote viewing.
Interesting.
And there's an intelligence here, and I could not find it, and I came to realize it's the planet itself.
Oh.
That was a big, that was a neat milestone in my career.
Fascinating. So the Earth, Gaia, is alive.
Yes, it certainly is.
Fascinating.
Certainly is. It's asking for help, too, and it's going to get it from the sun.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's asking...
Because it has a cancer on its surface. See, the Earth was able to cure itself. Over the ages, it could cure itself from anything, but it now has a disease that it can't. It has no way to heal itself anymore. So it has to go outside and ask for help. And essentially, that's what the sun is going to do. The sun's going to fry us. That's what this kill shot sequence of solar flares I've talked about for so many years. Right, we're right on the cusp of that beginning.
Hmm. I had heard that after Chernobyl in 1986 that the Earth itself had sent out a cry for help to the sun, and it responded by global warming or the heating up from the sun. Is this the same kind of situation?
No. These solar flares that I predicted, you can look at my actual predictions and seeing what I call the shot across the bow, all that. These are life erasers. I mean, they heat up. They take out all of the satellites. I'm not talking about single event latch-ups and all that from X-ray,
mm-hmm.
Charged surfaces. No, they're going to take out all of the communication satellites that are on the sun facing side during these huge mega flares.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they created a whole new band. Called the mega flare. 2 weeks before this huge flare in 2004, I said, this is going to be a shot across the bow. The sun's about to go on a rampage. Or 2 weeks later, biggest solar flare in history. It popped. Well, this is the kind of solar flare I'm talking about. If it's Earth-facing at the time, then you're going to have protons coming down to the deck, meaning the Earth's atmosphere. So not only are electronics going out, some power grids going down, not all, but you're going to have a rapid heating. You're talking about 10 degrees, perhaps, in a very short period of time, a year. And so it's the indirect results of these solar flares that will take out a good degree of this cancer that's on the Earth's surface. Man.
What time frame do you see this happening, or have you seen this?
2014 will be the first. The sequence will start this year.
Do you know a month or
no? We can't do that remotely. Our limitations are alphanumerics and time.
Okay.
We can, for instance, if you have a top secret document in your desk, I can pull out all the ideas associated with it, all the illustrations, all that. But we can't actually read it.
Hmm.
We can't read the numbers or the letters. Only the ideas behind it. Yeah. Everything exists as a pattern of information.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no words in the matrix, the universal mind. They're just patterns. And what we can convert those in our memory to what we know in mm-hmm. terms of our own memories.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never seen the color red before and there's red at your target, there's no way for you to be able to describe it because you've never been exposed to red before. So if you've been exposed to pink, you could say, well, it's like pink, but I don't know what this color is.
Sure.
Because it's not in your memory.
We've got a couple of minutes left, Ed. I was going to ask you one quick question and then let you make the closing comments. On Neptune, did you detect any life there? Very interesting.
No, but on Titan, the largest moon of Saturn, we did many years ago a remote viewing survey of Titan, and there is life in the seas of Titan. It's sort of like a saprophytic living sponge that moves. There's life in that sea. In fact, I briefed Harrison Schmitt, the Apollo 17 astronaut, the last man
mm-hmm.
to walk on the moon, about he's a geologist, and so he's very interested. He was the head of the Defense Science Board, and I had to brief him on other things. I pulled him aside, and said, hey, there's this unit, this psychic spying unit, that I'm also involved in, and we were looking at Titan.
Wow, fascinating. We've got about 2 minutes left, and I'm going to make some closing remarks, and I'm going to let you, Ed, finish the program with whatever comments you'd like to make. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW 1150 here in Bellevue, Washington. We will be having Joe Trolley, one of the best psychics on the East Coast, a week from today, along with Professor David Jacobs of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, of Temple University. He's one of the best UFO researchers in the country. Ed, I've sure appreciated you being on the program. We've got about a minute and a half left, and I'd like to invite you back again at your convenience. And I'd like to just leave this open. You've got about a minute or two left. If anything else you'd like to tell our listeners and let you make the closing comments.
Yeah, learn this. I'm going to retire as soon as I can. Learn how to do remote viewing for yourself. Learn this skill. It's a skill. It's an attention management skill. It's like nothing else that you've ever been exposed to. And it's a taught, learned thing. Go to learnrv.com. I also teach online there. And go to the forums, ask questions. LearnRV.com, and that'll give you all the background that you need on both media and remote viewing.
And you can also go to the show website at www.outofthisworld1150.com for more information on Ed's wonderful courses he teaches. And I'd also like to repeat, we have a new spiritual newsletter that's coming out for those interested. I think you'll find it invaluable. And there's a 100% money-back guarantee. If you don't like it, I'd be happy to send your funds back, but I think you'll enjoy it. And until next week, my friends, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And again, thank you for tuning in.
In the year 3535, ain't gonna need.